Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to African Conversations. Today we are joined by Nesser Ali, author of The Paleo-American and Mound Builders. Mr. Nehe currently serves as one of the ministers of the Governing Council of Tepiu-Awi-Ra. Welcome, Mr. Ali. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Mr. Williams. How are you doing today?
Oh, great, great. Who is Nesser Ali?
Let's go ahead and start with a little bit about my background.
Okay.
I went to three different high schools in three different states. I went to high school in Michigan, Georgia, and Wisconsin. I attended Fisk University for several years, and I finished matriculating with my bachelor's degree at Houston Tillotson in Austin, Texas. After leaving Houston Tillotson and going out into the workforce a couple years after that, while I was working full-time, I did an executive MBA program while I was working for a large information technology outsourcing firm. I've been with them for several years and did an executive MBA program and used to do IT outsourcing contracts for a number of years. And while I was there, I got my MBA and finished that up. And then we parted ways several years ago after I came across some really, really interesting information while I was working on a project in Detroit Public Schools, actually, is where I was working. And came across a gentleman who I knew from Nashville, Tennessee, from my days at Fisk. Hadn't seen him for several years. And as we were getting back together, you know, he was really insistent on getting me to agree that there were some Negroid peoples who had lived and existed in the Americas before the transatlantic slave trade. Now, having been a biological sciences major and undergraduate, I just found that a bit far-fetched. So naturally, I just kind of blew it off. But the friend of mine was, you know, he was an engineering major, so I didn't necessarily just want to presume that he was just, you know, rattling something off at the top of his head. So I proceeded to, in between my travels back and forth, at the time I was in Chicago, and my travels back and forth between Chicago and Detroit, I just began to do a little bit of research. Hopefully I could just, you know, shut the conversation down. And I came across an article that was very specific, and the article was very explicit in stating that there is a race of people that existed in the Americas long before American Indians were here, and even alongside the American Indians, that when they describe their facial features, their facial features don't match what you and I would typically call a Mongoloid or a modern-day Asiatic, a Chinese, a Japanese, Vietnamese, Korean. That's a Mongoloid. That's the description that's used to describe that facial cranial shape. They don't describe these Paleo-Americans or Paleo-Indians as having that facial shape. They describe it as having something similar to a sub-Saharan African or an Australian Aboriginal or a Melanese Negrito. And when I read that article, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to let my friend win the conversation. I'm just not going to say nothing about that. You know, I'm just going to keep on looking for something else. I didn't want to let him win that conversation, right? So I proceeded, that's how it went down. So, I proceeded to continue to research and continue to research to find, you know, the counter to that research article related to the Paleo-American. and the Paleo-Indians, and I found none. They all say the same thing, and they all say that they all looked a certain way, and none of them really deviate from that. So then I kind of had this question mark. It was like, okay, now, me being a biology major, you know, I got kids, you know, I teach my kids how to read and write and stress that they use what they know. You know, it's great that you know something, but can you apply it? Can you use it? You know, what you going to do with it?
Right.
So I had this conversation with them, and, you know, they were like, okay, well, Dad, that's nice, but I really don't see how that applies. And I said, oh, well, okay, well, let me find something and see if it can be applied. Because I challenge them, and I ask them to challenge me. I try to learn as much from my kids as I try to teach them, too, sometimes. So
mm-hmm.
I began to set out on a journey, a personal journey, to figure out how this information could be applied in everyday life, be it commercial, civics, social, ethnic, you know, cultural, whatever it may be. Can this information be used? Because the more I began to find this information and the more I began to trace either similar or dissimilar articles, the further back I went in time, the older source that I found that says the exact same thing is from 1847 from the Smithsonian Institute. It makes the exact same claim, it just does it in a number. And
okay.
So after about 2 years of accumulating this information from 2007 to 2009, I've ended up having a headache on the right side of my head just because the information was kind of, it was disturbing my spirit. So I set out to just write the book to get the information out of my head onto paper. And so that's really the story behind Nesserim Neher Ali and the book, you know, The Paleo-American, which is really a primer. I call it a primer because it's a teaching tool. It's not really a
right.
fun read. It's an educational tool, and it's meant for you to sit down and study. That's why I call it a primer on ancient American history.
Okay, I mean, so what kind of other resources did you find in terms? I mean, did I understand Leo Vina wrote something about the the ancient Africans in America. Dr. Van Sermon's Journal of African Civilizations wrote something about. I know he wrote they came for Columbus, and but he wrote, well, at least he compiled some other things by ancient Africans in America. Did any of those resources assist you in your learning about what was going on here?
They did, because when I was at Fisk, naturally, a lot of those authors were definitely brought forward to my attention. So I already had a lot of that information in my subconscious from previous reading. But the problem is, when I began to research directly on the term Paleo-American or Paleo-Indian, it actually was older than the timeline described, for example, in Ivan Van Sertima's They Came Before Columbus, because he's talking about the Olmecs. And
right.
the archaeological record for that particular civilization, regardless of what name you apply to, it only goes back maybe 5,000-6,000 years. But you're talking about the Paleo-Americans, you're talking about over 50,000 years ago. This is well beyond the time span of what is referenced in the artifacts and the record in that book. And that's when I began to look at it a little more critically, because the people are still described the same. They look exactly the same way as he described them and they came before Columbus. But the individual publications in the scientific community paint a slightly different story. Like, have you ever heard of the race of people called Andamanese? Or the Andamans?
No.
They are the aboriginals of India. They live off the southeast coast of India, and they are what a lot of folks on the east coast would call the Asiatic black man. It's actually a race of people called the Andamanese. The last native Andaman speaking, aboriginal speaking matriarch passed away about a year or two ago. God rest her soul. These people look just like folks on the south side of Chicago. I mean, they look exactly the same. However,
you know what? I have heard of them. I didn't know there were people. Dr. Velu Anamali. I watched his lecture the other day.
He just mentioned that.
He collaborated with Dr. Vinod Khurshid.
Yes.
Yes, that's him. Yeah.
He did mention that. So those are the Andamanese people. That's what they are called. And in a lot of the research, there's actually a website on the Andamanese called andaman.org. It's an excellent, excellent website. It's based, the organization called the Andaman Organization or the Andaman Association is based out of Switzerland. They have a cadre of research scientists from all over the world whose focus is to catalog and research this Negroid, Asiatic, Aboriginal to make sure that, you know, folks just don't disappear into the netherworld and never ever be on the planet again. However,
right.
When I went through his site, they got Aboriginal black looking people on every continent: Africa, Europe, Asia, Australia, South America, but there's this big gaping hole over North America. It's like they act like there was no Aboriginal Negroid peoples in North America at ever in the world. And so I wrote the gentleman to ask him for rights and permissions to use a graphic on his website. He said, yes, not a problem. And I gave him two research articles on the Paleo-Americans in North America so he could add it to the website to let him know, you need to update your map, brother, you know, because you got black folks being the first everywhere in the world except for North America. How is that possible when they've been publishing this for the last 150 years?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
So, oh, yeah.
I went through all of those, and I went through Ivan Van Sertima's resources, and I looked at some of the sources where he got his stuff from. Africans and Native Americans is another good source. Forbidden Archaeology is another good source for those who want to do some research on this type of material. But I would just recommend going directly to certain publications. Molecular and Genetics Biology, that's an excellent source. The American Association of Physical Anthropologists. You can go to each of these publications and do keyword searches and begin to actually comb through what these folks are doing to get their master's and PhDs and what their competing and conflicting theories are, so you can arrive at your own conclusion based off of the research and the statistics and how they're manipulating the numbers. And that's basically what I had to do for 2 years, is I had to go through a lot of these publications and research articles one by one by one, read the abstract, read the article, you know, look at what data they pull, how they pull the data, what statistics did they use, what formulas did they use, how did they use it, what articles are they sourcing, who is this guy in this article that they sourcing, and what's his background, what's his version of the story, you know, where is he getting his stuff from? And really, you have to trace it back, because what I see has happened in the last 150 years, and I'm going to just put it on the table for you, Brother Williams, is the original people on the planet have been scientifically repressed. You cannot dummy this down. You cannot try to make it simple, because it has been translated. Your features have been translated into a number, and your number has been put in a book, and the book has been put on a shelf. And if somebody said, you don't exist anymore, you're just a history story, you're called black.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been done through a scientific series of transactions. So in order to undo something, you have to first understand its nature and then deconstruct it and reconstruct what was originally there. So the whole premise of the book is to help deconstruct the natural science behind what is called a Paleo-American, because the word paleo itself is a Greek word for ancient.
Right.
Paleo-Americans are not the same as Native Americans.
What exactly is what they call a Native American? Could you share that?
A Native American is a race of people that fit into one of five matriarchal bloodlines. A, B, C, D, or X is what they say. People typically exhibit a mongoloid shape to the face, which you would probably call, and I'm not being derogatory, I'm just using this as a phrase so people can equate it, you know, Sitting Bull, Pocahontas, Sacagawea. When you hear Indian or American Indian or Native American, that's what you think of. However, the word native, at least in the legal sense, goes back to a Latin word, nativus, which means a serf or a villain of the Lord, which means you a slave of the occupier or, you know, monarchy. So whenever you hear the word native, it automatically superimposes a colonial perspective on whoever accepts that term.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of people don't understand there's a reason why the white folks want these indigenous people to call themselves Native Americans.
Right. This is according to their word, you know, the power of the speech and the inherent meanings in them place them in an inferior or submissive position.
Absolutely. And that's why a lot of them signed contracts and, you know, lost their sovereignty, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that's just kind of the whole spoils of war thing. And, you know, you get a white person every now and then to tell the truth and be like, well, we whipped y'all butt, we took y'all stuff, so deal with it. You know, we here now. And a lot of people in the conscious community will say the same thing about Africa, and those who discuss the Aboriginal Negroes being here in the Americas will also say the same thing. You know, you got these Europeans here who, well, they're here now, so what you gonna do? You gotta deal with it. You gotta find a way to navigate through this matrix and through this system to be able to get what you need and get what you do to move to the next level.
Right.
The book really kind of helps create a possibility for a new direction that is understandable by those European minds. Like if somebody says, well, I'm a Moor, you know, when I was in school at FIST, they talked about the Moors all the time, but the Moors are in Africa. The Moors aren't here. So automatically, right, because of popular programming, the person has a strong possibility of getting confused to say, I'm a Moor and I'm indigenous. That causes a little bit of cognitive dissonance. Because you can't be from Africa and be indigenous here. That to some people is hard for them to grasp. Even though people can point to, you know, racial hierarchy codes or what have you, that's really difficult. But if you say to somebody, I'm a Paleo-American, you say that to a white person, they'll understand exactly what you're talking about. I've done it. I've tested it. I've had students in my class go out into the world and test it. They didn't believe me. One of the sisters went out talking to this European at a museum, and you know, she was talking about the mound builders this and mound builder that, and she said we in front of the European, and he said, oh, you're a Native American and blah blah blah. She said, no, I'm a Paleo American. And she said the white guy was stunned. She said he couldn't talk for about 60 seconds. He didn't know what to say. Then he kind of found a reason to shuffle off and disappear. Now this is an anthropologist now. This wasn't
right,
some random guy giving a tour guide. This was an anthropologist working at the museum, and when she said that, she said he stared at her long time.
Right, she said it was a long time.
Right, like, okay, you know, the question starts going through his head, like, oh, boy, this ain't good. Somebody done told her what's going on. You
right.
Know? So when that experience happened with her, she came back to class, and she was like, Ness, you weren't joking when you said these white people know what this is. You were really serious. I said, oh, of course I'm serious. They know exactly.
Right.
They've been writing about it for the last 150 years. It's just you keep wanting to call yourself black, and that doesn't fit anywhere on the planet. Black only fits in under this system over here in America. Nowhere else on the planet is it connected to anything.
Well, what do you say to people who point to ancient literature ancient sacred literature, rather, where they describe themselves using words that have been defined as black, like Kush?
Well, then you would have to use that word. You would have to call yourself Kushite, not black.
Right. Yeah, black
I mean?
Is in their language. I understand. In their language, it has a different power, is what you're saying.
Right. I mean, that's the whole premise of, I hate to...
Instead of translating it. Language,
yeah,
where it has
translating it and the vibration associated with the language, most languages are alphanumeric. So based on that, even if you change the language, the vibration and the thought process is the same. Yes, that's true. However, each language has its own power, its own vibration, its own wavelength. And if you're using a English, Latin, and Greek-derived language, yes, you can follow it all the way back to Latin and Greek and Hebrew and Rock Hebrew and Phoenician and Ancient Kemetic. You can do that, but it's still not the same. And to say that because it means black over here means the same thing over there does not have the same power. Like when I mentioned native, And the, right. the definition of native coming from nativus, which means a villain or a serf on the land of the king, that means you don't own nothing, and everything you do, you give to somebody else. So, you know, some people don't understand that word black only has meaning as a race of people for what it has been given by someone else's language for a detriment of another people. And, you know, one of the things I also teach in my classes is all people have the right to self-determination. Specifically, self-determination of their political status. And your political status means how do you interact with the larger community? What do you call yourself? Do you call yourself a forced immigrant, a.k.a. slave descendant, a.k.a. black, African-American, Negro, and colored? They're almost all the same, right? It doesn't matter whether you say the term has been updated to African-American. Black and African-American are in the same group as far as the racial hierarchy code of the federal executive branch is concerned under Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's interesting because black does not mean the same thing as African-American, does not mean the same thing as African in that same racial hierarchy code that the government uses under the Office of Management and Budget. So black and African-American technically are not the same thing. A lot of people don't know that either. They think they're interchangeable, and I'm like, no, they're not. They don't mean
right, they call people in India black. And they are called Dalits, but they're not African. They're Indian. And then there are black Russians. And I think some of them aren't even... some of them have been brought there by force, and some are considered black. I think they're from Belarus. And some of them aren't even... don't even have black skin complex. They're not even melanated.
Yeah.
So, right, I know you're saying, in their system of linguistic dominating programming... black has a different power. So unless you are talking to somebody that understands what you are saying in the, you know, the context you're using it, or you yourself understand it, but when you actually, when you're communicating to these people, these other people, that it has a different meaning to them, so it's gonna have a different effect. I think that's what you're saying. So if you use these terms and they already right.
I put it to you this way. You ever watched the movie Harry Potter? Any of them?
I have, I don't know which one I've seen, though.
Did you see it at the movie theater or at your home?
At the home.
Okay. Let's take a look, maybe for those who get the opportunity to listen to the audio. If any of these people went to actually watch it at the movie theater, you would have seen that, and I don't know if you know this or not, but a good strong majority of the people who call themselves going to watch the movie also go to Christian churches. They don't.
Yeah.
A lot of them, the hardcore Christians will say don't go, but a good majority of them will actually go and say, you know, it's no big problem, and they don't see any conflict between going and watching this show that has witches and wizards and warlocks, right, casting spells and dealing with demons and monsters and other dimensions and transportations and all that, and then going to church on Sunday. They don't see any conflict between that. And typically, neither did the Europeans when they were allegedly doing all this slavery. They didn't see any problem taking a leather whip, lashing across somebody's back, then go and praise God on Sunday. They didn't see any conflict between that. So you got to understand that when you deal with these words as they are constructed, there's a branch of Barack's office called the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, and they have created what's called the racial hierarchy code and the ethnic hierarchy code, and they are used when you fill out your self-determined race and your self-determined ethnicity. Okay, now typically you only see 5 or 6 entries, right? You'll see American Indian or Alaskan Native, that's one. 2, you'll see Asian. 3, you'll see black or African or African American, right? 4, you'll see Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, and then 5, you might see white, right? And then you might be lucky and get a 6th category called other. Now, what you don't know is that there's a spreadsheet that has entries in a database for this, and that there's over 1,000 entries as categories and subcategories and sub-subcategories and sub-sub-subcategories under each of those 5 or 6 top levels. That's what I meant by when I said black ain't the same as African-American, because black falls under the category called R3. They call it generally African, right? So
right.
You have R3, then you have R3.01, which is black, R3.02, which is African-American, and R3.03, which is African, R3.04, Bahamian, R3.05, Barbadian, R3.06, Dominican. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So these are all different subcategories, R3.112, West Indian. So if black is R301, African-American is R302, and African is R3.03, then if you write down black on the census, that's going to get counted as a separate, distinct group. And if, let's say that you have a cousin that puts down African-American, that's going to get counted as a separate group. They aren't going to group them all together.
Okay.
So that means your numbers just got split into 4, 5, 6, or 7 categories. And so it looks like there aren't as many of you as there really are. Yeah, I know that's kind of
stupid. I know, it creates the minority illusion.
Right, because it makes it look like there's a fragmented set of groups, because some folks want to call
themselves
black.
Right, so
and
right.
Black,
and they're identifying themselves as one group and then collecting all their numbers, and so they appear to be a ethnic majority.
Right, exactly.
That was just, did I have you correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing about it. So, you know, when I filled out the census, I put down Paleo-American. They were kind of flabbergasted. They really didn't know what to do.
Like, nobody's ever done it.
Right, and they were like, well, what's that? I said, well, ain't no slavery, so you can't make me change my mind. I put on there what I put on there. So they lumped it under other, because there is no category for it, so they lumped it under other. So we're in the process now of trying to figure out who in the federal government on the executive side do we need to talk to have Paleo-American added somewhere in that database. So when we put it down, it gets counted toward a category instead of lumped into the unknown.
Right.
See what I mean?
That's
the difference.
Right. You're not getting no representation or status.
Right. So that is right, because if you ain't getting no representation, you ain't getting no money.
Right.
Because all the census is coming from the Department of Commerce is basically allocation of funds based off of different groups who live in certain places and da-da-da-da-da. And if you're not checking in, they're going to make you check in. They're going to find you.
Right.
They're going to make you fill out that dang census, even if you just put how many people are there. That's all you're required to do is count bodies. That's all you're required to do. But they're going to make you check in because they commercially need to know what's going on. Right? So when you talk about Paleo-Americans and mound builders, you're talking about this ancient race of people whose length of tenure here in what is now called the Western Hemisphere goes back much further than American Indians, goes up to and including the 1600s in certain places in the U.S. where they were still found and still practicing their mound builder ways. And then all of a sudden in the 1600s, when slavery kicked in, all of a sudden, everything that looked Negroid just got lumped in a general category of black. Even though now it's revealed, since 1847, 250 years after that 1600-year mark, right? So 1600 is that dividing line from what I've seen, and then from 1600 to 1850, that's when all the real heavy language on white superiority came out. You really look at it, like when you talked about it, like when it really kicked into high gear was between 1600 and 1850. In 1850, you know, then they stopped. But by then, they had already made everybody think that everybody that got here or looked like this came right here on a boat. But then they went back and were looking at the archaeological record starting in 1847, and they were like, well, the face looks African. Oh, but these people are gone. They dead. Really?
Okay. We're going to take a short break for a few messages. We'll pick right back up with Mr. Nasser Ali with the Paleo American, and we'll be right back.
Song Community Experience is an extension of the Woman's Song Facebook community. Woman's Song was created with the mission to promote sisterhood and solidarity amongst women of color the world over. The Community Experience radio broadcast is an outreach effort to bring lecturers, authors, healers, spiritualists, and others with the necessary information to assist us in our campaign to repair ourselves. Our community is in dire need of reformation. And during this Renaissance period of awareness, we will honor the womb man. And we seek to bridge the gap of understanding, love, and the upliftment of our sisters in crisis. Will you join us? We need your help in bringing this new awakening to all who desire its enlightenment. Become a part of our commitment to elevation as we work together to lift the divine earths to their rightful places. Woman Song. She's singing.
Well, thank you for tuning in to African Conversations, and we're back with Mr. Nasser Ali, author of The Paleo American and Mound Builders. Hello, Mr. Ali.
Hello. Thanks for having me back again.
Oh, yes. And before we took our break, you were discussing the language of these anthropologists and how they were encoding the white superiority, and they were, I guess, collecting all the different Negroid groups and just labeling them black. And could you continue to elaborate on that, if you will?
Sure. There is one of the oldest sources that I found. I guess I'll go back to that one first. Is the Smithsonian Museum or the Smithsonian Institution. A little bit of history on that. Smithson, when he passed away, he had in his will he wanted to donate his museum and his library to the United States. So when he donated it by an act of Congress, they created the Smithsonian Museum or the Smithsonian Institution. And they designated by Congress, by act of federal Congress, that the president, the vice president, and the chief justice of the Supreme Court of the United States would sit on the board of the Smithsonian. This is when it first got created. Now, in 1847, they had a publication called Ancient Monuments of the Mississippi Valley. A lot of people who've read about the Mound Builders have probably heard about this text. At least I'm hoping that they have. However, in this text, there's, like, towards the back, there's two tables. Like on page, I think it's 290 or 291 and 292, somewhere around there. And in this, it's just a table of values. It's just a table of measurements. And there's columns and there's rows. And the columns give you location of mounds. And the rows, as you go down, give you cranial measurements. And one of the rows has a cranial measurement called facial angle, okay? Which is kind of like a profile shot. It's like if you looked at my face from the side and you measured between the bone between my eyes down to between my two front teeth, back up to my ear and back to between my eyes as a triangle. That face of the triangle between my eyes and my two front teeth, if it sits up straight at 90 degrees, right, that's called orthognathism. Now, if that angle is less than 90 degrees, for instance, if you're looking at me from my left side, so you're looking at my left ear, and my mouth slides forward so that that angle kind of tilts to the right a little bit, right? It's going to tilt to the right. So that means it's going to be a little bit less than a 90-degree angle, because 90-degree angle will be sitting up straight. So when you bend it back, when you tilt that angle back, it shortens and makes the right angle smaller than 90 degrees. And if it's less than 82 degrees, that's called prognathic. That's a general term that means facial angle of the skull is less than 82 degrees. And anthropologists have pretty much said for the last 200 plus years that prognathism is a universal Negroid trait. Universal. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about Africans, Paleo-Europeans, the Asiatic black man, the Andamanese, Australian Aboriginals, or Paleo-Americans, or mound builders. It doesn't matter what you call them. If the facial angle is less than 2 degrees, it's called prognathism, and it's typically a Negroid trait. That's it.
Wow.
So when you look at this book from 1847 about the mound builders along the Mississippi River, it has all these facial angles, and all of them are less than 82 degrees. But they don't tell you in the book. In nowhere in the book does it ever explicitly say, oh, these are ancient Negro people that built these mounds. They don't say that. It's just a book that describes the people, got picture of the mounds and picture of the artifacts and the implements of what they ate and how they lived and how the mounds were all beautiful, and some had perfect circles, perfect squares, 90-degree angles, lined with the stars, and go through this wonderful description. They don't give you any idea what these people look like. Never tell you what they look like. I mean, the book goes into beautiful detail about the Olmecs down in Mexico and how they used to make obsidian slivers that were sharper than a razor blade. You know what I'm saying? And they would make up to 400 or 500 of these a day. So basically the Olmec brothers were shaving back in the day using obsidian razor blades, which nowadays, right now as of today, I just saw this last week, the surgeons are switching from surgical steel to obsidian razor blades and scalpels, because obsidian blades are actually sharper at the micrometer level than a surgical steel knife. But these Olmec brothers was doing this 5,000 years ago down in central Mexico. But the book never actually describes anything. All it does is give you a number. But if you don't understand what that number, facial angle of less than 82 degrees, means in terms of being able to decode it and interpret it back into a facial feature that can describe what the people look like, you'll just think the author of the book was trying to be smart by putting some numbers in the book.
Right. Because it does, right. Nobody knows. And you have to know what it means, you know.
Right. Which is why I said earlier, you know, you can't really dumb this down.
Right. But all you
have
to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have to talk your way out. You have to literally think your way out the matrix.
Right. That's what it requires. And so these people who like to claim to be the master race and they want to make it difficult, and which, you know, they're benefiting from, they're living for free. They're living off people. So by creating ignorance and, you know, making the knowledge vacuum, you know, they can... You know, they can apparently get away with these criminal acts.
Have you ever... You've heard of Stonehenge, right?
Yes.
Okay. Stonehenge was supposedly made, like, maybe 40,000 plus years ago, right?
Right.
When you mentioned, you just made a statement earlier about, you know, them, meaning I'm presuming you meant Europeans, and how they sometimes will present that they've been here this long amount of time, and, you know, they've done all these wonderful things over history and time. And I found, because I still do research now for my lectures, because I give lectures. I'm about to start up a new lecture series probably next month here in South Chicago, and I do book lecture engagements as well outside of the Chicago area. But I was doing some research, and I came across an article published in 2007 by the American Association of Physical Anthropologists. They found the gene that creates, or manifests itself, rather, as pale European skin. So they've isolated that gene. And when they traced it back to what's called the MCRA, most common recent ancestor, they could only trace it back between 6 and 12,000 years. Now, Charles, you and I have had several discussions, so I know you being a chemist, you know that when somebody puts a delimiter on something, that means it doesn't exist beyond that.
Right, doesn't just beyond that, and it may even be shorter. It could have even just stretched as far as it could. They thought it could be believable plausibility.
Right, so that means Stonehenge could not have possibly been created by European druids or Europeans as you perceive them now, because the gene code that they swear on is the way that they classify everybody on the planet says that they didn't walk the planet 12,000 years ago.
Exactly. Now, even Dr. Barry Fell said in his book, America BC, that he was certain that it was Canaanite technology.
I wouldn't go for or against, because I haven't, you know, I'm trying to avoid that topic, because that's a hot topic. Because I've actually had some conversations with some Europeans, you know, and they'll start talking about, you know, I ask them where they from and blah, 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 and they start talking about world history and this and world history that, and, you know, white folks did this and Stonehenge and da, 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 and I'm like, y'all didn't build Stonehenge. And they're like, what do you mean? Yeah, black people, y'all slavery here 500 years ago. I'm like, no, I'm a Paleo-American. I've been here over 80, 90,000 years. What you talking about? I was here before Native Americans, and then they stuck. And then I say, and by the way, you didn't build Stonehenge either. The American Association of Anthropologists said your gene, the pale skin, didn't exist until 12,000 years ago, so it couldn't have been you. You just got here. And they really kind of get upset about that.
Right.
So
you're not supposed to. Right. And one thing I have with those people that just want to say, you know, slavery or whatever, this is the 2,000-year-old conflict, which is a short span of time in human history. And they want to try to expand. Really, they want to expand this period of black oppression and subjugation beyond this 2,000-year range. You know, that's just the beginning and the end.
I try to make it a little bit longer than that. I try to make it like 2,500, 2,600 years.
Because that's when Alexander, you know, 332 BC. That's when I dated beginning when he conquered Egypt, at least not lower Egypt anyway.
Yeah, and that's really, in my opinion, that's when it got started. But then again, it was their time for the last 2,600 years. That's what they're supposed to do. But when, like you said, they try to make it seem like the last 2,600 years, all this activity has happened. When in all actuality, one of the first things that I do when I start teaching a lecture for new folks that have never been to one of my classes on Paleo-Americans and mound builders, I have a slide section called Perspectives on Time, because a lot of people think just the last 500 years is a lot of history from 1492. They think that that's like everything, and then Lord forbid you go back to zero or you go back to 300 BC, they think that's a really long amount of time. And I'm like, let's just be clear on how long the planet has been around. Let's talk about how long life has been on the planet. Then the different versions of life on the planet. Then you're going to get to mammals. And you already lost a couple billion years out of that before you get to mammals. Mammals in the last couple hundred million or so. Then when you start getting to that, then you start dealing with the out of Africa theory, which it is a theory. And there are competing theories that are based on sound evidence that have been published in parallel and alongside and in contradiction to the out of Africa theory. And a lot of our people are not aware of that, because the whole issue of race as it is presented by non-Europeans is based off of the premise that modern human beings migrated out of Africa 125,000 years ago, and that modern human beings evolved in modern day Africa 200,000 years ago, modern human beings as they look today. However, in my book, I got specific evidence that refutes that was admitted and published and agreed to and confirmed by one of the first curators of the Smithsonian Museum that modern human beings were found in South America 3.59 million years ago.
Right. I agree. I think,
you know,
have been and matter of fact, I would like to just have you looked at oceanography and on the seafaring technology of ancient people in connection with the migration of the paleo negroid?
Yes, I have.
That's
one of the things, because it's almost like I have to teach a class on world geography and world migration patterns, because there's basically 1, 2, 3 basic theories on how the Americas got populated. There's a Pacific theory, and then there's a Australia-Oceania theory. The Pacific theory is that the ancient Asiatic Negroid came over from Asia before the Mongoloid existed and came across the Bering Strait. That's one. Two, came across from a boat from where China is straight to California. Three, came from Australia straight down to Argentina. And then there's another one, and this one, everybody in the class always giggles about this, that says these ancient Paleo-Europeans came on a boat from the western coast of Europe and populated the east coast. And that's how the Americas got populated. And some folks in my class are like, wait a minute, hold on. The white folks are the ones that created Indians, and that's why I have to keep reminding them, no, this is before 12,000 years. You have to unprogram yourself. The Europeans did not walk the planet when this was going on. So when I say Paleo-European, you have to reprogram yourself as to what that means.
Paleo-European, right, modern-day white man.
Right. Paleo-European is not a modern-day white man. A Paleo-European, actually, there's a, on my Facebook page for the Paleo-American, there's a picture in one of the photo groups that has a picture of a facial reconstruction of a Paleo-European, and it looks like a Paleo-American, which kind of looks like somebody on the south side of Chicago. You know, it looks like a brother. And there's a European, Dr. Walter Nevis, who did the facial reconstruction of that particular skeleton, which is called the Wausau Man. And he basically says that this face could become African, it could become Australian, it could become Asian, it could become European. And basically what he's saying is these ancient peoples are the progenitors or precede all races, and they maintained the ability genetically to express any of these features. And that is to be expected for the originator of all the races of today. That should be only expected. There's a particular article, I'm going to read this to you. This is just an abstract from one of the articles that I found on the Paleo-American. And basically it reads as this. Several studies concerning the extracontinental morphological affinity of Paleo-Indian skeletons carried out independently in South and North America have indicated that the Americas were first occupied by non-Mongoloids that made their way to the New World in ancient times. The first South Americans show a clear resemblance to modern South Pacific and African populations, while the first North Americans seem to be at an unresolved position between modern South Pacific and Europeans. Now this is the kicker sentence. In none of these analyses, the first Americans show any resemblance to either Northeast Asians or modern Native Americans.
Wow.
So the first Americans bear no resemblance at all to modern Native Americans. They don't look like that.
Right.
And that was the first article I came across, and that's the one that kind of proverbially peeled my scalp, because I was like, wait a minute. And this article was published in 1999.
Right. And it's interesting how they talk about, I guess the Barry Fell and and I think his book Saga of America, they talk about all of these Egyptian and Berber expeditions in deep into Arkansas and up the Mississippi River Valley. It appears that they had been in constant contact with the Americans. Even Van Sertman interview that he had with Mr. Gil Noble, I was live viewing. He talked about ancients, what we call, I guess, Paleo-American settlements into Africa. He said that we were in constant contact, even when Columbus was, sailing for the Spanish, when they were looking for new lands to conquer and rape, they saw this traffic.
Yeah.
And so is it likely that, that either the ancient Paleo-American, his presence was ignored? Perhaps maybe that's how the European was able to gain a foothold, by helping the so-called modern Native American oppress or subdue or even exterminate the Paleo American, the Paleo Negro, and then he ended up turning on the American Indian. Is that possible?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I inquired into that question, and there's one anthropologist who proposed that, based off of the evidence as he's interpreting it, that Native Americans are just as guilty of trying to extinguish an older race, the Paleo-Americans, as they claim foul that the Europeans tried to extinguish them.
Right.
And he did that based off of evidence that shows Native Americans, and it appeared as if the Paleo-Americans began to get attacked.
Yeah, sounds like it.
In a certain time period, over and over again, and I was reading it again last night in one of my texts. I'm working on my second book. It should be out in the next 30 days or so, on specifically just the mound builders. The first book is really heavy on the Paleo-Americans. The second one, going to talk in a little more detail about the mound builders. But I was doing some research to try to help pull from these disparate sources. What it appears is almost like they were getting attacked from multiple areas, multiple ways, and they were basically getting the boards crashed in on them. And it shows up in several other texts. There are some archaeological interviews where they would discuss remains with the Native Americans, and Native Americans would say, "We don't talk about those bones. We don't discuss that." And they were like, "Why?" "Well, we don't talk about that. That don't have nothing to do with us. We don't want to talk about that. We're not going to discuss that. Those aren't our people. We know what's going on, but they don't want to talk about it because they know, first of all, the skulls don't look like them. Second of all, they know they tried to kill the people off. And third of all, if they know they tried to kill the people off and the people still here, then that means all these checks they've been getting from the federal government is fraud."
Right.
Let's just get straight to the point, which is, where's the relevance today? Which means there's a problem with this topic. And it isn't that it presents an issue of right or wrong. It's not an issue of right or wrong. It's an issue of money. And in this, you know, United States of America, everything runs on contracts and money. Let's just be honest about it. It does. It's free enterprise for a reason. And considering that a lot of these Native Americans, American Indians, have crafted a lifestyle that is based off of a moral high ground, that they are the first people in the Americas, it would not be in their best interest for them to disclose that they were not the first people of the Americas.
Right.
Right? Second of all,
right,
considering no one is claiming to be, outside of myself and the folks that come to my class, a Paleo-American, outside of that group, there is no large cohesive body that says, we are going to cling to the ways of our ancestors and we will not forsake the way of our mother and father, and we will go and walk backwards to go get what was lost and bring it to forward to today.
Right.
because it changes the nature of the transaction and how you interact with government, depending upon how you self-identify or self-determine your status. Nobody, whenever you fill out race, they can't make you fill out black. I've seen folks put down white that look black. I've seen folks put down Indian look like black. I've seen put down Spanish and look black. You know what I mean? Nobody can tell you what you are. Only you can do that. But the difference is, because we still have this silly argument about black versus African-American versus whatever, whatever other thing, and not realizing that while we're still trying to figure out the core basis of our culture, because it starts with who are you, not what do you call yourself. It starts with who are you, where do you come from. That's the basis of a culture. Who are you and where do you come from? And if you say you're from Africa, then yes, you should call yourself African or African-American. I don't say I'm from Africa. I say I'm from here, and I can prove it. I can prove that people that look like me are from here and have been here before everybody else. So,
and they can't disprove that either. Most important, they can't prove that you're not. They can't, because, you know, they can't prove that you couldn't have been a Paleo-American living in Africa and they brought you back to America.
Right. And even if they could prove it, there are international treaties and declarations that say you cannot discriminate against a person because of their genetic code, because a person's identity encompasses more than their genetic code. So even if they try to prove and say, you're not from here, they still can't stop you from calling yourself a Paleo-American. You moving in that. I just got the two-minute marker on my phone.
All right. We thank you for coming on. You can reach Nessa Ali at the Paleo-American .com.
I have a paleo-american.com is the website. You can contact me at Nesser, N-E-S-E-R, at paleo-american.com. You can also find me on Facebook, paleo-american. And I do lectures. I will actually, there's a possibility I may be in Atlanta in the next 2 weeks for a potential engagement. It depends on probably in the next 48 hours. I will do so whenever I have a lecture. I do post them on the website, let folks know. I wanted to definitely express my thanks to you, Brother Williams, for bringing me on your show today. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We're glad to have you on, and we'll look forward to speaking with you again about your next book.
Sounds good, brother. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You're welcome. And thank you for joining us on African Conversations. And we'll see you again next time.